Art and Science.
A radio show about the European Digital Art and Science Network. Hello and welcome to the Ars Radio Show, where we are presenting European Digital Art and Science Network, a program launched by Ars Electronica, which aims to combine scientific topics with creative and innovative approaches to digital art. The project Art and Science enables to the artists to get engaged in the scientific work at ESA, ESO or CERN, which are scientific mentoring institutions and are representing Europe's peak in scientific research. The Ars Electronica Future Lab is then providing state-of-the-art technical production possibilities in a transdisciplinary discourse. And at the end, 7 European cultural partners are representing strong European cultural and artistic positions. All these institutions are considering a big manifold called European Digital Art and Science Network. In the first edition of Ars Radio, we are presenting two artists in residence within the 2016 Art and Science at ESA open call, Irish media artist Eva van Lindenthal with her spectacular explosive performance called Starstorm, and American kinetic artist and roboticist Sarah Petkus with her inventive project The Wandering Artist. Romina Hatz and Irnea Zavets were in conversation with the artists. Microphone, Irnea Zavets. Eva van Lindenthal is a multidisciplinary artist working primarily with explosive media and is inspired by different scientific disciplines like chemistry, physics and cosmology. With her project Starstorm, which tackles the life cycle of stars and the physical processes of stellar formation and evolution across the universe, she was able to convince the jury that she is the right artist for the first opportunity of a residency at ESA's European Space Research and Technology Center. We will hear Eva van Lindenthal in an interview about her project Starstorm, about her experiences, expectations and challenges in the residency.
May you introduce yourself?
I'm Eva van Lindenthal. I'm a multidisciplinary artist and I work with explosives. I applied with a project called Starstorm. The idea was to research the stars in our sun, which I've always been very interested in and have always wanted to make work about and
with.
And I wanted to design a series of explosions which leading people through a series of performances which are inspired by the phenomenon of the stars and the sun. Not necessarily descriptive performances, so it's not necessarily, some of them kind of emulate or try to emulate the environment of the phenomenon that I'm looking at, but often they try to tap into some kind of inherent emotional response that we would maybe have to a situation or an environment such as the one I'm thinking about.
Why are you interested in explosions?
To me, explosions are a natural phenomenon of the universe, so they have such power and such, you know, they change the environment immediately, and they're quite a kind of force for creation in the universe as well as destruction. They're not, I don't really see the destruction in them. They're just changing matter, or they change density or kind of the space around them. So to me, they're a kind of tool that can be used as anything, like a chisel, you know, destroys a piece of wood in order to make something. So I can use explosions as a kind of tool. But there's so many interesting phenomena with explosions, and people have such an emotional response to them. And when I started using them, that was one of the things that really opened up my practice, which was I started working with metals and creating images and drawings from explosions blasting onto metals and blasting onto paper and blasting onto clay, and I was really experimenting. I experiment a lot with my work, and then when people saw the work and became really emotional and started coming to me and they were crying and they were telling me about their husband dying and they were telling me about the war they escaped and they would love the work and they felt it gave them some kind of release and some kind of positive feeling from it. And then I kind of thought, okay, this is important. So I started to invite people to give me objects that I would explode for them, and they get the object back and they would have to tell me why they wanted it exploded. So they ended up telling me all these, so I was inviting all these stories and all these, not just stories, but people always, most for the most part, had a story, but also an intention, that the reason the explosion gives a meaning, a moment of transition and change, not only to the object, but to their own perception of what that object means. We have attachments to things, you know, a book that somebody bought us makes us think about that person, or a paper that we wrote at uni that we can't throw away. And, you know, there's lots of connotations we have with objects. And so you get all of this out. And once it's exploded, it means something different to the person, which is really fascinating. And it's that opened up a whole new thing. And I think that's a really powerful part of the work.
Why do you think that explosions are creating so many emotions?
I think because our emotions are the very powerful ones, love, hate, regret. They happen, they give us a very fast, quick, powerful feeling. So they kind of, we often refer to our emotions in an explosive way as well. Oh, that blew me away, or, you know, various other things. But I think that powerful sense of change, I think people, you know, your life can be changed in a second. If somebody comes in and tells you your husband died, your whole world has changed. It's completely different and it will never, ever be the same again. And that is why I think people have that sense of inevitable change, something they can't stop, a kind of chain reaction, a kind of, it's this loss of control as well. It's like something outside of yourself and it's very emotional. And like, you can't help who you're in love with, you know? Mm. And that's the agony and the beauty of it.
Like a happening.
Yeah.
Something that you cannot see coming.
Yeah, and it's exciting as well. It's,
yes,
it's nature.
Unpredictable.
Yeah.
Your artist in residency is within Art and Science project. And can you tell us more about this art and science side of your work?
I believe the definitions of art and science are incredibly useful to us. We need to define realms of knowledge and investigation, because without that it helps us to understand what we're talking about. It helps us to further our knowledge fields, and it's really essential actually. But I really had to let go of what art was in order to make my work, because some of the work I made was not really within the realms of, or all the ideas that I have are not really necessarily within the realms of art. And people always try to describe art. What is art? It's subjective, or it's, you know, depends on how you look at it, etc., etc. And people are always trying to define it, and I think it's the biggest waste of time. I think you need to just forget what art is. And in the same sense, you kind of forget what science is as well, because if you're in a creative space and you start to think in those definitions, then you lose your ability to be free to imagine anything. And I like to be able to imagine anything, so I just forget. To me, it's nature, it's all nature. And one of the points I make is a photon does not know if it's being used to reflect off a painting and produce the color red. It doesn't know if it's being used to create a spectroscopic image of the sun for scientific discovery, you know, to see what the elements are within, deep within it. It just is, exists, and it's in nature for everybody to use, for everybody to learn and acknowledge and utilize in any way. And so it's kind of seeing all the elements of nature as they are, and using art and science in the languages of our society to be able to help me facilitate the ideas or allow me to talk about them and understand them. So to me, this art and science worlds are very much, they help educate, they help create, they help us understand each other through language, but they're only there for us to understand nature.
How was your experience of the Artist in Residence program?
It was really phenomenal, actually. Kind of life-changing. Really, the experience was, because it was drawn out over the course of a year, I was able to kind of go in, come back, think about things, go back again. But I had lots of different kinds of experiences. So I went to the control center and watched the Mars landing. And then I went to Aztec and had lots of meetings with people and learnt a lot, which is, I think, the maybe traditional route of an artist in residence. You kind of go, you observe, you learn. They kind of open their doors to show you what they do. And then the second trip, I went back to Aztec because I did two sort of long trips. I actually did three trips actually altogether, because I went for a sort of short recce for a few days, and then I did 3 weeks, and then I did 3 weeks. So the second trip was actually quite different in that I created a whole new conceptual work and project, which was a series of works. I created a workshop for the scientists and created an interactive work, which was, I presented one morning in a kind of shared space. It's a kind of public area, and anyone could drop in and take part in it. And I also created these brainstorm sessions for the project. So I'd kind of, in between the first and second trip, I designed the project. So I designed all the different parts of the performance. And then I did something which I'd never done before, which is I presented these to the scientists, and I said, these are my ideas. What do you think? How does this relate to your science? And invited them to contribute and take part in, and kind of in a very light way, collaborate almost in shaping those performances and in different ways. And that was really amazing. I was quite scared about that. I didn't know if it would work. I didn't know if they'd be interested. I didn't know if it would be valuable for them or for me. And actually, I did four sessions, and by the fourth one, it was great. We had this really magical moments where people from different areas were coming together and talking, and they often don't know what each other do because they're so specialized. And then when you get them in a room and they're all talking, it's this actually really new conversations come up, because things they never talked about before in their work, and they don't know the answers to. And it's really interesting to see them. They don't know answers to some fundamental questions. And actually, you realise that there's no stupid question in science. There's no simple questions either, or nothing too simple. Many of the questions they're dealing with are really simple, and they don't know the answers to. And that is the fundamental reason why they're doing their work. And the other thing was that even though having a kind of understanding of the science beforehand is really useful, and it allows you to talk at a good level with them, with scientists, some of the ideas are really simple. With a bit of explanation, everyone can understand them, like everybody. The working out of the science is hard. So all the mathematics and the data and how the machinery and the engineering works, of course, that's very, very specialised. But the ideas behind the experiments, the ideas behind what they're doing are quite simple. And I think I found that quite a nice revelation. Because it is accessible to everybody. It's accessible to anybody in the world to talk about these things and be excited about it. And yeah, so the experience was great. I think the main things that I wanted to say about my experience was that sense of engaging with people was really went beyond what I was expecting a little bit. It was great. And then just changing, it opened up a whole new community for me and a whole new areas of research. You know, the science community, space community across the globe is really opened up. I mean, I feel like I can just call people, and if I need to, I can contact. I made lots and lots of friends. I can call them up and say, hey, they're very open, and once you make those bonds and those connections, you can kind of call them, I think.
What would you suggest, or which advice would you give to the next resident artist, if you reflect on your
get involved be one of them, get involved, get stuck in, get your hands dirty. Like, try to engage, and I think you get more from it by, I think there's just a much better and more powerful interaction if you can try to engage people in a process or in part of a process or something. It's a lot more work to do that, and it requires more work from them as well, but I think now they're kind of prepared for that. So, and meet as many people as possible and make new life-changing connections, because that's really important. The people that you meet, I've met friends, I've met people from all over the world. So there's just an amazing network, a support network. So, you know, just go for it.
Noodle is my kid. Like, I'm totally impressing my life goals on him, because I wanted to go into space, and now I'm like, you have to go into space one day.
Among Eva van Lindenthal, the jury of the 2016 Art and Science at ESA Open Call also identified another promising and inventive project, The Wandering Artist, submitted by American kinetic artist and roboticist Sarah Petkus.
Well, I'm Sarah Petkus. I'm from Las Vegas, Nevada, and I am a kinetic artist who builds robots, and I also illustrate a graphic novel called Gravity Road.
With which idea or project did you apply for the artist in residency program?
I applied for the artist in residency program with the Wandering Artist Project, which was meant to explore the concept of sending, rather than a scientific instrument to an alien planet, an instrument that represented itself and interacted with an extraterrestrial environment in a personally expressive or artistic or creative way. And if so, in what way would the machine do so? And it was a study of that. I think the way I phrased it was, everything we send into space is an extension of ourselves. It's a tool. It serves us. It's collecting data, and it's strictly observational. And I asked, well, what if we did something different? Why do we always have to take that approach?
Why do you think you were selected as a resident artist?
I think if they saw my work or they reviewed what I've done in the past, I think part of the artist residency is their scientists want to get something from me, too. And I think as a person and as an artist, I can be kind of goofy and crazy and disruptive. And I think it was appealing to have me as a character with the ideas that I have in their environment to sort of break things up and kind of, you know, wander around and talk to people and be kind of loud and brash and ask the things that were going to get people out of their headspace, I guess.
Previous question, previous question, you explained your work, but can you tell us a bit more about the Wandering Artist?
Like specifics, what I ended up developing. So before I went to ESA, I already had kind of decided and sketched out an outline for the project, which I sent to my contacts there at ESA. And I said, look, these are my intentions. I'm focusing on these types of behaviors. I wanted to start building kind of the mechanical equivalent of sketches. So it's part of my practice to design things in CAD and then 3D print them and assemble them and just iterate very quickly, because 3D printing allows you to do that, and you can't with metal. So I wanted to get four functioning behavioral systems that exhibited some sort of thing that the robot would do, like the swallowing or the planting of beans or the salivating and, you know, the tweeting, all the different nuance type behaviors. And I wanted to bring the mechanisms with me and kind of carry them around the facility as conversation pieces. So I was walking into people's offices or laboratories with this bag of feet, these like weird kind of cylindrical things that looked strange to begin with, and they're even weirder once I started describing what they did. And I would put them down on the table and be like, okay, well, this is my robot Noodle, and he uses this thing to leave puddles in places when he walks, and this means this to me. And I would talk about those things, and At first, I could, like, most people were like, this is really strange. And I think it was absurd on some level, which it was supposed to be. But everyone kind of relates to that also, because everyone's a human, and human behavior is kind of absurd when you think about it. We do strange things. So everybody, they liked it, they got it. And then it helped break the ice, because there was a playfulness to the prototypes that I brought with me. And then that led to more in-depth discussion about either technical things, like this is how you could improve this exact mechanism. Like, you're not going about this in maybe the optimal way. You could maybe try this. And then I would take notes and then decide to change the design once I got back to my lab in Las Vegas. Or they would say things like, well, this kind of reminds me of how people do this. And then it would be more of a conceptual thing. And I would write that down and kind of stew over it. And it became kind of part of the overall philosophy or the concept behind the project. So that was what the residency part of The Wandering Artist came to be. And then now that I'm exhibiting the outcome, I took all of that, all of the technical feedback and the philosophical feedback and the ideas, and I've made adjustments, and I've gone ahead and finished the final iterations of those four appendages, and they'll be on display, and they're based on all of the input that, you know, I received. And I think of it this way, like, for machines and AI, like, ideas are kind of part of their DNA and their evolution. Like, the good ideas, the more they're repeated and the creator hears them, the more likely they are to stick. And the machine evolves with those ideas because they are the stronger ones, they're the stronger genes, and they get pushed into further generations where others just kind of bounce off of you and, you know, they fall away. But you could think of Noodle and his feet as having DNA from Issa now, because it's in my head.
How did you establish a desire or a free, like, choice of the robots? Because I think your robot can choose, right? And he has desires.
The end goal for the project, and this is something that is kind of a long-term goal, is, yes, it's the choice thing. Like, I call the Wandering Artist Project, like, these four specific appendages I also refer to as his modes of taste. And it's because they actually taste things, like, they sample things from his environment. But taste also means preference. It lends itself to the idea of preference. And that's because part of Noodle's program is that if he does encounter a situation where he tastes something or he swallows something and takes a picture of it, he will log the outcome of that experience so that it can inform future encounters. And then he can decide whether he interacts the same way or if he does something different. And then he'll log that, and that will inform future encounters. But over a period of time, I want that to create or simulate sort of an idea, like a sense of preference. Like, in these situations, I respond this way all the time because I like these things. Or we would say, he must like these things because he responds favorably. The robot doesn't know that, but we'll go, oh, this, based on us witnessing its behavior, he must like things that taste like this, that are very acidic and lemony tasting, which is something he can do. He can test for acidity and alkalinity. So we will kind of translate his behavior as, ah, he likes these things or doesn't like these things. But I want him to be able to develop that over a period of time based on his programming. But that's kind of not where I've been focusing yet, but that's part of the overall.
We would want to know also how is the whole process of you being an artist in residency, and so what were your experiences, for example, negative, positive, or what was the challenging part?
I think it was challenging to adapt to the environment after I got there and saw what I was actually faced with based on what my initial, like, assumptions were, like, my expectations, I guess. So after the first week, I had kind of a clear sense of what the facility was and what went on there. And by the second week, I was starting to ask the right questions, I think. I kind of had a feel for what it was I wanted to get out of the people available to me. And then by the third week, all the crazy unexpected things started happening. Like, I was invited to see things, I met people, you know, to go talk over drinks or whatever, and it became a lot more personal and organic. But it was also the week I was saying my goodbyes. So time-wise, it felt like I could have maybe had another portion of time after my initial experience there to kind of digest things and then come back with like a plan of action and how I wanted to maybe follow up with people in their environment for a second visit. But challenge-wise, I wanted to maximize every encounter. So for me, it was, if I only get to meet this person once, I want to make sure I learn as much from them as I possibly can and leave as much of an impact on them as I can and just not be afraid to ask them whatever it is I feel I need to now in this moment. And I needed to keep myself constantly pushing to kind of absorb as much as I could. Because, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, everything was valuable. All of it was. Even the very, the personal, nuancy, seemingly unimportant stuff kind of hinted at elements of humanity that related to the scientists themselves. And that's really what I was interested in, was seeing, you know, how they as people related to their studies, how it informed what they did.
What fascinates you about creating robots?
For me, the reason why I'm still interested in robots is that it's immensely challenging to make a mechanical thing, like a mechanical system that works, that functions well. It's not a matter of kind of creating a thing that looks the way it ought to and then it will work. It has to exactly physically be a certain way in order to function. And there's this whole process of figuring out what that exact shape needs to be that takes a lot of trial and error and creating things, making a million versions of something that don't work, and then finally you get to that one that does. But when you do, it's like magic, and you've invented something. You've created a thing that does that no one else has. It's awesome to look at because it's physical shapes that move kind of in a ballet to perform their task. And then on top of that, like icing on the cake, you have all these iterations leading up to that that are almost as fascinating as the one that works because they fail in some way. You can study how they don't work. And that's why I keep doing it.
So what advice would you give to the next artist in residence here?
I would say for other people who might be kind of introverted like me, like I am, I can be on the shy side. I would say just go out of your way to ask as many questions as you can to the facilitators where you're going. Like for me, it was at ESA. Get in contact with those people. Be very clear about what your expectations are and what your needs are and what you think it is that you want to achieve while you're there. And learn as much as you can about what they have to offer. And just ask as many questions as possible so that when you get there that you spend less time you will spend time figuring it out, but try to minimize that as much as possible so that you can get onto the cool stuff.
You have been listening to the Ars Radio show, in which we are representing European Digital Art and Science Network, a project launched by Ars Electronica, which aims to combine scientific topics with creative and innovative approaches to digital art. In today's edition, we were presenting two artists in residence within the 2016 Art and Science at ESA Open Call. Irish media artist Aoife van Lindenthal with her spectacular explosive performance called Starstorm, and American kinetic artist and roboticist Sarah Pietkus with her inventive project The Wandering Artist. Rumina Ahats and Jernea Zavec were in conversation with the artists. Microphone Jernea Zavec.
Art and Science.
A radio show about the European Digital Art and Science Network.